Jamie ignored Dex's call. Carefully, he pulled himself into the crevice, hand over gloved hand, until his boots touched the stone floor of the niche. The wall loomed above him, pinkish-brown, solid, silent. With trembling hands, Jamie bent over to anchor the cable attached to his harness on the spike in the stone floor. He worked with enforced, consciously deliberate motions. He was quivering inside. He wanted to leap out and explore the cliff dwelling, but he knew he had to make certain his lifeline back to the rim of the canyon wall was secure. Like a drunk trying to show he was sober, Jamie tied down the cable with exaggerated exactness. "Your picture's breaking up!" Dex's voice crackled with static in his earphones. "Rock's interfering with the transmission."
"Can't be helped," Jamie said.
He started to unclip the harness. His hands were shaking so much it took him 3 tries to unfasten it completely. "Jamie, you've got to come up now!" Dex's urging voice was weak, distant, scratched with interference. "Half an hour," he said absently as he finally stepped out of the harness and stood, erect and free, on the floor of the crevice. His insides were trembling.
"Don't go! Wait until—"
Dex's voice fluttered, whined.
"Stacy! From the dome! Having a fit?"
Jamie ignored him. He looked up at the wall that rose before him. The wall built by Martians. High up, near its top, he saw rectangular openings, a line of them from one end of the wall to the other. Windows. They're windows! What had looked like a broken, crumbled roof line from outside was actually a row of windows staring out into the canyon. His knees felt rubbery. His insides fluttered.
"They were here, Grandfather," he said in his mind. "They really were here."
Jamie's eyes blurred, and he realized they were filled with tears. His earphones were silent now, except for a faint, hissing static. The voices from above couldn't reach him here. Jamie was alone with the ghosts of the long-gone past. The building was old. Even encased in the bulky heart suit, Jamie could feel the centuries and millennia, the eons that these walls had stood here. The solid, silent stones exuded age, untold spans of years, countless generations of hope and faith and endurance. The burnished, dying light from the distant setting sun bathed the walls in a ruddy luster, made them seem to glow from within. Old. Incredibly ancient. Before the cliff dwellings of the old ones. Before the Parthenon. Before the pyramids, this building stood here in this niche of rock, waiting. Waiting. Waiting for me. For us. "For people of the blue world to find you," Jamie said to himself. Blinking, forcing his shaking legs to carry him, he paced the length of the stone wall. His geologist's mind was asking, how old? What materials? What purpose? But in his red heart he knew, intelligent creatures built this community, this village, in this sheltered cove of rock millions of years ago. Millions of years ago. They were here. What happened to them? Where did they go?
"Are you getting the imagery?" he asked.
No reply. Jamie forced himself to walk back to the spike and the tethered cable. He could see that the sky was beginning to darken. What little sunlight left to the day carried no warmth.
"Can you hear me, Dex?"
"Yes! You've got to come up. It's almost sunset."
"Come on down," Jamie said. "I'll send the harness up to you."
"No, I can't."
"Dex, you won't want to miss this. When we report back to Stacy and the others, it ought to be both of us."
A long moment of silence. Then Dex said,
"There's only about another half hour of daylight, maybe less."
"Enough," Jamie said, unfastening the cable from the spike embedded in the rock floor. The harness swung free out beyond the edge of the cleft.
"Take it up," he told Trumbull. "Full speed. Don't waste time."
"The safety regulations. There were Martians down here, Dex. Living, intelligent, building Martians."
The harness yanked up and out of sight. While he waited for Dex, Jamie paced deeper into the cleft, along the side wall of the village. He saw low entryways in the wall, and back in the gloomy shadows at the rear of the cave, a circular pit. A well? He asked himself. Too big for that. A kiva? He laughed nervously. Don't start that. It'd be a kiva back in Mesa Verde, but that doesn't mean the Martians built the same kind of religious centers. Don't jump to conclusions. But what else could it be? A voice in his head demanded. Patience, his grandfather whispered. You can't unlock all the doors at once. I'm starting down. Dex's voice crackled in the earphones, tense, unhappy. Great. Nobody's minding the winch, you know.
It won't walk away, Jamie said. We planted it good and firm.
I hope.
Jamie paced the length of the building, fighting the irrational urge to tear off his hard suit and face these ancient stones unprotected, feel them with his bare hands.
The sky above the far horizon was turning from orange to violet when Dex came into view, dangling in the harness. Jamie wished he could see the man's face, see his eyes pop at his first sight of the dwelling. He heard Dex's sharp intake of breath.
Christ, how old can this be?
That's what we're here to find out, Jamie said. The speed of light. Vijay felt the press of their bodies as all six of the explorers crowded into the comm center. Rodriguez sat at the console with his bandaged hand tied against his chest by a sling. Stacy Dezhurova sat beside him. No one made a sound, not even a breath, as they stared at the main display screen.
We've got to get back up to the rover now, Jamie was saying, his voice sounding tired, drained. I just wanted to make sure that you all saw this. It's a building, for certain. There were intelligent Martians here.
Vijay's throat felt dry, even though she was perspiring in the hot, crowded cubicle.
I did not think it was real. Dezhurova admitted, her voice low, hollow. Not until your imagery started to come through did I believe it is real.
It's real, Jamie said. Better send the news to Tarawa. Pete Connors was dozing peacefully in his aluminum and plastic beach lounge chair. It was Sunday afternoon. The sun was hot, but the breeze coming in off the reef was brisk and delicious. He had been watching the Kansas City Chiefs playing a night football game against the Philadelphia Eagles on his little portable TV, but had fallen asleep in the middle of a scoreless defensive struggle. He awoke to his wife rudely shaking his shoulder.
What's the matter?
She was frowning.
It's the office. They want you to come over right away. Top priority, they say.
Connors scrambled out of the lounge chair, nearly tripping himself. What the hell's gone wrong now, he muttered. With a peck for his wife's cheek, he ran from the lanai around the corner of the tile-roofed house to the garage, hopped on his electric motorbike, and started pedaling furiously down the housing-tracked street that led to the island's main road. In less than 10 minutes, he was gawking at Jamie's footage of the cliff dwelling.
"Oh, my good Lord," said former astronaut Pete Connors, sinking into a chair in front of the display screen.
"This is the big one." The people crowding around him in the cinder-block-walled comm center were staring, too, some grinning, some open-mouthed, with awe.
"Feed this to ICU headquarters right away," Connors said.
"It's Saturday evening in New York," one of his assistants reminded him. "They'll be closed. Maybe we ought to send it directly to the news media," someone suggested.
"No," Connors snapped. "ICU's got to make the announcement, not us. Get the board chairman on the phone, wherever he is. And Lee Chengdu at Princeton."
"What about Mr. Trumbull?"
Connors took in a deep breath.
"Yeah, Trumbull, too. He'd get pretty pissed if we didn't tell him right off."
Walter Lawrence was sipping a martini as he supervised the trimming of the family Christmas tree, a chore that he once dreaded, but now that he was a grandfather, it was actually enjoyable to watch his grown children struggling to keep their tykes from breaking the ornaments and messing everything up beyond recall. He sat in his favorite wing chair by the fireplace, wishing it would snow. There hadn't been a white Christmas in simply ages, and Central Park always looked so pretty in the snow. Now it was gray and bare and grimy-looking outside his 20th-floor window. The butler brought the phone to him and placed it gently on the sherry table beside the wing chair.
"Tarawa, sir,"
He still pronounced